Okay, so what I was trying to do is start with the question, who were the Moabites? Anyone? Oh, yes, they were from Moab. That's a great start. What else? They were the children of Lot, with some irregularity there. All right. What was their relationship like with Israel before and during the time of the judges? Yes. Israel was not supposed to make war with Moab. All right. What else? Moab didn't let them go through. And then during the time of the judges, there was Moabite oppression of Israel. So the Israelite-Moabite relationship wasn't terribly comfortable. Matter of fact, there was an awful lot of unhappiness there. And that's the kind of the setting that we have going into Ruth. So with that in mind, what is it, what makes Ruth's first marriage unusual? Okay, so she married one of the bad guys. I mean, really, she went over, well, excuse me. He went over with his family, all right, but here we have a Jewish family going into Moab, all right, and we have a Jew marrying a Moabite woman. Matter of fact, we have two Jews marrying Moabite women. Right. Now, bonus question, does anyone know what the consequences were of marrying a Moabite? No, it was not stoning. But it was actually, in a way, worse.
You lost
In what way? Yes and no. There was a very specific consequence. The consequence is that any children of this marriage between Jew and Moabite would not be allowed to worship at the tabernacle. They were not allowed into this place that was it was exclusively for the Jews. And there was provision made for proselytes, for those who were not Jews, who became Jews, that embraced the worship of the Lord. There was provision for them to come part way. Right? But offspring of this union between Jew and Moabite weren't going to be allowed to worship. Right? So this is an unusual situation. Right? And yet it's also kind of a demonstration of where Israel was at this point. Now let's see if we can get through some of this not workingness. Okay. So with that in mind, let's start with Ruth chapter 1, and I'll read verses 1 through 13. Now it came about in the days when the judges governed, that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They took for themselves Moabite women as wives, and the name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth, and they lived there about 10 years. Both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. Then she arose and with her daughters-in-law, she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the land of Moab, for she had heard that in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them food. So she departed from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. May the Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "No, but we will surely return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? "Return, my daughters, go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me." So we see this setting that there's famine in the land. Things are not good with Israel. And Elimelech takes his family, picks up, and he leaves. All right, he's doing what he can. There's food there. There's not food here. So he goes into Moab to provide for his family. All right. Now, implied in here, it's never explicitly stated, but implied in here is that his family plot was sold. All right, and that's implied, but that becomes part of what we see later. All right, is that he liquidated his assets, probably to fund, going over there and starting fresh in Moab. And there's really just nothing more said about Elimelech. He took his family over and he died. He's not a main character here. And it's after the death of the father that the sons marry Moabites. So it may be that they were too young to marry before. It may have been that he was a restraining factor, that they wouldn't marry Moabites, when daddy was there to say, no, bad idea. But whatever it is, it's after his death that these two young men marry Moabite women. And then they die. And that's about the end of the story for them as well. Because it's not about Elimelech. It's not about Mahlon and Chilion. All right. And at this point, we hear that things have started to go well back in Israel again. All right. There's food in the land again. All right. And so Naomi's going back to the land of her birth. All right. She's already lost everything. All right. Might as well lose everything and go back and die in the land that she grew up in. All right. And then that's about the tone that she has here. God's against me. I've lost everything. All right. And as she goes back, she starts to look out for her daughters-in-law. All right. And so there's this extended discussion here. She says, go back to the house of your parents. Right? And there's this hope that you're still young enough, you can get remarried. Right? There's no need for you to be perpetually widows. You can find another man that can provide for you. Go back. Right? If God's against me, he doesn't have to be against you. Go back. Right? And one of the daughters-in-law does that. Right? After some initial protestation, Orpah goes. Right? And that's the end of the story for Orpah. We know nothing more about her. Right? But Ruth doesn't. Ruth stands out as being different. There's one that leaves and one that stays. Right? So there's this concept of Naomi looking out for the benefit of her daughters-in-law on the one hand. But there's this kind of, well, what about? Because in sending them back, she also is saying, stay with your families, stay with your religion. And she's saying, go back, get married. But she's also, in doing that, she's saying, she's pushing them to never learn about God. We see, in some sense, her priorities have been skewed. Right? That in sending them back, we have no indication that Orpah ever heard about Yahweh, that Orpah ever put her faith in Yahweh. Right? And implied in some of what Ruth says is that prior to this, they didn't. Right? But so Naomi's, she's thinking temporally here now, it's to their benefit to go back because they can find a husband, but she's not thinking of faith and eternal consequence there. But then we also hear just a hint of what's going to go on. She says, why stay with me? Could I have more children, more sons that you could marry? And here we understand that the idea of a levirate marriage was not unique to Israel. This was something that was done in other lands as well. That if a union was unproductive prior to the death of the husband, that the wife would marry a brother to raise up the family name, to keep the family name. And Naomi's saying, I'm too old. That's just not going to happen. Even if it were biologically possible, and I got married today, had a kid in the next 9 months, it's still, you're going to be too old by the time the kid's old enough to marry you. It's just, there's no reason for you to stay with me. Go back. So in verse 14 to 22, and they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And then she said, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or turn your back from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. So they both went until they came to Bethlehem, and when they had come to Bethlehem, all the city was stirred because of them, and the women said, is this Naomi? And she said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi? Since the Lord has witnessed against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me. So Naomi returned, and with her Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, who returned from the land of Moab. And they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. And now, this is still all kind of setting, all right, but we see Orpah goes back, and Ruth makes this profound statement. She says, do not urge me to leave. Right. Might as well shut up. I'm staying. Right. But she says, for where you go, I will go. Right. I'm with you all the way. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Now, if you think about that, in some ways, she's making a similar promise to Naomi as she made to Mahlon. All right, she's offering to live with her, to embrace Naomi's people as her own people. Where she lives, Ruth will live. Where she dies, Ruth will die, and she's going to worship Naomi's God. All right, so she has embraced Naomi as family and completely turned her back on Moab, on the Moabites, on her own family. All right, and she treats her with respect, with loyalty, with devotion. Right? And she's like I said, she's treating her as close family, right? with the same amount of devotion that she would have shown to a husband. Right? So our first look at Ruth here is that we see loyalty. Right? We see a very strong trait of loyalty. It's loyalty to her family, right? And she embraced hardship out of loyalty. She could have gone back and probably could have found another husband and been provided for. Right? Life as a widow was not easy. But she accepted that, she embraced that out of loyalty to her family. Her family being Naomi. Right? We see humility. Ruth wasn't looking at, you know, what do I want and what's good for me. Right. She's looking out for Naomi's best interest. Right. She's putting Naomi's well-being over her own. And especially within this statement, we see that she has turned from the Moabite gods. She's turned her back on those Moabite gods, and she is now embracing Yahweh. She has turned to the Lord, and she is now serving the Lord, because that's the God of Naomi. In chapter 2, verses 1 to 13, now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. So she departed and went and gleaned in the fields after the reapers. And she happened to come to a portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" The servant in charge of the reapers replied, "She is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." Thus she came and has remained from morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go and glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight, that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward you, reward your work, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." And then she said, "I have found favor in your sight, my lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." So now we see a new setting. We see Boaz. And it says several times, Boaz, the kinsman of Elimelech. Boaz, the kinsman of Elimelech. He's being introduced for a reason. He's being introduced as the kinsman. And this gets into this idea of a kinsman redeemer, who was there was provision in the law that if land was sold, or if people had to sell themselves into indentured servitude, that the nearest kinsman, if possible, would redeem them. So we're already being introduced to Boaz, and it's being set up that he's in a position to do this. Right, he's a man of great wealth. He's got the financial means. He's a near relative. He's legally obligated. Right, and he's the man for the job. He's already set up in the story for that. And we see that as Boaz shows up to work, right, Ruth's already there. Right, she's been there since early in the morning. She's been working, right, taking a break. And he doesn't recognize her by sight. But he recognizes her by reputation. Right? As soon as his servant says, "Oh yeah, it's that Moabite woman that came back with Naomi." "Oh, I know which one you're talking about." And we see that because when he talks to Ruth, he says, "It's been fully reported to me." And then what's the author do here? He says, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth, came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord." So she has left her father and mother and gone with, and this statement of Boaz actually repeats Ruth's statement from the previous chapter, where Ruth said, "Your people will be my people. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. I will die where you die, and your God will be my God." He's echoing that statement. "I've heard all about that." And he lays it out. I know. And when he says, "May your God," she said, "May your God be my God." He says, "May the Lord reward your, may your wages be full from the Lord." All right. So it follows that, mirrors that statement. He knows about this. As a matter of fact, everybody knows. I mean, this has got to be the talk of the town. Moabites don't become servants of Yahweh. Moabites don't like the Jews. Moabites oppress the Jews. There's bad blood there. And yet here we have a woman that's done the unheard of. She's done something different. Everyone knows this story. Ruth's done the unusual, and God's already blessing her. Right? She's come to the field of Boaz. There's fields. She picked one. She went there. Right, there doesn't seem to be any initial indication that she was directed this way by Naomi. She went and found the field and she asked for permission to glean and was given permission. Right, this is part of how the law handled poverty. Right, the law said, all right, you allow widows, orphans, and foreigners, right, the aliens in the land, to go behind and clean up anything that, as they were gathering the sheaves, anything that fell out, they were to leave there. Right. So Boaz is following the law, right, and Ruth is taking advantage of what the law allows her to do. Right. And God's blessing her. God is blessing Ruth for her decision to leave Moab and come to Israel. But what else do we see about Ruth here? What else do we see? We see that she is now providing for Naomi. Now, I can only imagine that gleaning is hard work. Right, that you're constantly bending over, picking up and picking up. Sit there in the hot sun, waiting for more. Go pick up. That's not going to be easy, even for a young woman. Now we think of Naomi, and she's got to be, what, 40, 50, maybe as much as 60? That's not going to be easy work for her. But she's not, Naomi's not out in the field. Naomi's a widow. But Ruth is out gathering enough for two. Ruth now is providing for Naomi. And we see here that Ruth is still humble. She, look at her attitude as she talks to Boaz. I'm not deserving of your kindness. I'm not one of your servants. I'm not like you. She knows that. And yet, and that's just her humility coming out. But she's showing her gratitude. Thank you. Starting in verse 14. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here, that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it, that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. And so she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. Her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked, and said, the name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. Again Naomi said to her, this man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives. Then Ruth the Moabite said, furthermore, he said to me, you should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest. Naomi said to Ruth, with her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maid so that others do not fall upon you in another field. So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest when the wheat and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. So now we start to see a slightly different picture of Israel here. Yeah, there were people that followed the law that let the gleanings fall, that people could go behind. But not everybody did this. And there were those that harassed the widows, the orphans, the aliens, as they were gleaning. As a matter of fact, Naomi expresses concern that if Ruth goes somewhere else, she may be attacked. So not everybody is following the law. And, well, that seems to be the story of the day with the judges, the time that this is happening in. All right, so there's some concern there. And even Boaz says to his servants, don't rebuke her. Don't harass her. Give her extra. All right, so even Boaz has some concern that his own servants, without instruction, might have mistreated her. And he makes sure that that doesn't happen. So not all is well in Israel, even now. But here Ruth has come to the field of Boaz, and Boaz makes sure she has plenty. He invites her not only to drink with his servants, but he feeds her with his servants. So she sits down, she has enough for lunch, and she's got leftovers to bring back to Naomi to eat. And as she gleans, she doesn't just have enough for herself, but I don't know how much an ephah is in buckets or barrels, right? But it's enough that she goes back, and Naomi looks at it and says, wow, where were you today that you got this much? That was not the normal amount for a widow to come back after a day of gleaning. She came back with lots. And not only did she come back with lots, Boaz says, stick around. Come back tomorrow. Keep coming back through the end of harvest. I'll make sure that you have plenty. And then now at the end of the chapter here, Naomi says, oh, by the way, yeah, stick with him. Go back. Because he's our close relative. And again, that idea of the kinsman redeemer is being brought in even early in the story. Yes, this man is important to our family. He's a close relative. So as we look at Ruth, we see that she's a hard worker. She shows up early in the morning. She works throughout the day. She's a hard worker. And again, we see her humility as she's caring for Naomi and looking out for Naomi's best interest. Chapter 3, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself and put on your best clothes and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to him, known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do. She said to her, all that you say I will do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came in secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. It happened that in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. So there's been a passage of time. We're now at the end of the barley season. Harvest is done, and they're threshing. All right, the removal of all the part of the grain that you don't want to separate from the stuff you do want. And this is a time of rejoicing. This is a time of happiness. This is your payday that comes around once or twice a year. It's party time. And Boaz is throwing a party. This is the normal celebration of harvest. He eats, he drinks, his heart was merry. This implies that he drank enough that there was a big smile on his face. And he goes and he's sleeping on the threshing floor, right there with his grain. Right? And we don't know why. We don't know if that's to keep people from borrowing a little extra, or if just so he could get up first thing in the morning and go back to work. But whatever it is, he's sleeping there. And Naomi expects that. And Naomi gives some instructions to Ruth. She says, this is what you need to do. And then what she instructs Ruth to do and what Ruth do, there's a cultural divide there that we haven't been able to cross. We don't know what it means for a woman to lay at his feet and uncover his feet. But something in that, he recognized it, Naomi recognized it, this is something that was done. So Ruth does what she's told. She goes, she lays down at his feet, she uncovers his feet, he wakes up with his feet cold. And there's someone there that he wasn't there when he went to sleep. He's sober enough to recognize that. She wasn't there when I started. But he says, who's there? And she says, it's Ruth. And we know what's going to go forward from here. And he says, so spread your covering over your maid, for you're a close relative. We can recognize that. We understand that. We need a kinsman redeemer. Are you our kinsman redeemer? Spread your coverings over your maid. You're a close relative. That's provide shelter, provide cover, provide for us. Take care of us. You're a close relative. Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear, for I will do whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when the morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." Again, he said, "Give me the cloak that is on you and hold it." And so she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, 'Do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then she said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today." So, this strange thing with her lying down at his feet and his response, we understand he's recognizing it, and he says, "All right, go back. I'll take care of it. But I can't step forward and just take care of it immediately. In that I can't redeem you because there's someone who has a closer right." Right. He's one step removed. But here, take some food and go. And he has her do this in the cover of darkness. So nobody can recognize who she is. And he tells his servants that were there sleeping. All right, he had others there as well. He says, "Nobody say anything. Keep quiet. Don't mention that she was here." And all that I can come up with is he doesn't want word to get back to the other guy until he can bring it up formally. Right? That he wants to take care of this in the proper setting. So he sends her back, but he sends her back with food. Right? So even if, as of later today, if the other guy redeems her, Boaz is still taking care of Naomi and Ruth. He's giving her food, even when she may turn out to be some other guy's wife tonight. He's taking care of her. And she goes back, and what's Naomi say? She says, it'll be done by this evening. He's not going to rest until he resolves this. So where things were going kind of slowly, all of a sudden the pace picks up. All right, it's going to be done soon. Right. So we get, and we see Boaz makes an interesting statement in verse 10. He says, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich." So he recognizes that Ruth is young enough, maybe pretty enough, that she could probably even land an Israelite man now if she wanted to. If she wanted to express her interest in a young man, She could probably still get married here. And yet, she's not looking out for her own benefit. Oh, I didn't want that. She's not looking out for her own benefit. She is looking out for her family. She is looking out for Naomi. She's going along with this custom of the kinsman redeemer rather than looking out for just some young guy. And we see here that Boaz isn't a spring chicken. We don't know how old he was, but he's older than what you would expect for marriageable age. He's old enough that he's not going to compete favorably with the young guys in some respects. And he recognizes that. And you know, it may be that in marrying him, Ruth was going to end up a widow a second time. That he was old enough that pretty much guaranteed he was going to die before she did. We don't know. But he recognizes, he says, "May you be blessed because your last kindness," this is turning to me as an alternative rather than a young guy, right? She is doing the right thing. She's doing the proper thing. Even when it's not in her best interest. So once again, we see demonstrated Ruth's loyalty. She's following her mother-in-law's people's customs. doing it their way. She's going to a man that's significantly older. She's showing loyalty to Naomi and to Naomi's family. All right, what she is doing benefits Naomi and Mahlon's family even more than it does her. All right, we see her obedience. Naomi says, this is how you need to do it. And what's Ruth do? She goes out and does it exactly the way Naomi said. She's showing obedience, that Naomi is an authority, and she obeys Naomi. And we see again her humility. She's doing all of this on behalf of Naomi. She's not putting herself first. And it's obvious. To anyone looking at her and watching her, it's obvious. Boaz says, all of my people know that you're a woman of excellence. You're a woman of high virtue. This is, Bethlehem's not that big of a place. But everybody in Bethlehem knows that Ruth is a good woman. So we come to the end of the book, the last chapter. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. So he said, turn aside, friend. Sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. So they sat down. Then he said to the closest relative, Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell a piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. So I thought to inform you, saying, buy it before those who are sitting here and before the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am after you. He said, I will redeem it. Then Boaz says, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance. The closest relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. Now this was the custom in the former times in Israel concerning the redemption and exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another, and this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So the closest relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders of all the people, you are witnesses today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance. So the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today. So this takes place in the gate. And the gate of the city seems to be the formal setting. This is the courthouse, if you will. This is where formal transactions that require legal obligation or bring about legal obligation, this is where they happen. It's in the gates of the city. The elders come down and sit in the gates, and if you have formal business, you gather a quorum together, and you hash out your business. All right, so Boaz brings in the unnamed relative, and he just remains forever unnamed. He's just a certain man. Right, he brings down and he says, Naomi has to sell, and it says sell the field, but here what she's doing, she's selling her rights of redemption. Her rights to buy back the land, she doesn't have it. She doesn't have right to, or she doesn't have the financial ability to redeem the land. She can't. So she's looking for someone else to redeem it. He says, all right, here, this land is up. All right, the land is available. Do you want to redeem it? The guy says, sure. Right, there's benefit there. He gets to hold on to the land, to use the land as if it were his until the year of, I believe it's a year of Jubilee, all right, when everything reverts back. All right, so that could be a good deal for him. And then Boaz, and we see a little bit of canny work here. He says, oh, by the way, Ruth's also looking to get married. So when you redeem the land, you need to redeem Ruth as well. And all of a sudden, the guy's not interested. Wait a second here. I can't do that. And we have to assume that he at least knew who Ruth was. Right? Everybody in town has already heard of Ruth and that she's a man or a woman of excellence. So it's not that he doesn't know who she is. It's not that her existence is a surprise to him. But something about the fact that she's now on the market for marriage, that she's looking to raise up this, to continue on the family name, he's not willing to do that. And he says, it'll jeopardize my inheritance. And there's lots of speculation on why. Nobody knows for sure. The best guess that I've read is that he doesn't have kids yet. And if he raises up a family for Mahlon, if he keeps that family going and doesn't manage to have another child that can carry on his family name, then all of his stuff goes to that child who actually is the descendant of Mahlon legally. So then his family loses out. That's the best guess that we can come up with, we being I and everybody I've read. But whatever it is, he all of a sudden he wants to pull back. If it was just a financial deal where he could benefit, that was fine. But he's not willing to raise up the family name. And this thing about taking the sandal off, really. All right. Well, again, it's a cultural thing. All right. If you go back in the law, there's actually a lot more in the law about this. All right. When a widow goes to the kinsman redeemer, if he's not willing to redeem, she drags him down to the elders and makes him formally declare in front of the elders that he's not willing to redeem. And she takes his sandal off and spits on him. This is a shameful thing. This is not just a business transaction of, oh, no, I'm turning it down. All right, he's actually accepting shame as being the lesser detrimental to his well-being than the possibility of risking his family inheritance. So he is accepting public shame for not marrying Ruth. And well, that leaves Boaz. And Boaz says, okay, everybody, you've seen it. You're my witnesses. He's got his quorum of elders together. Verses 11. All the people who were in the court and the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel, and may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore Judah, through the offspring which the Lord will give you by this young woman. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her. And then the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today. May his name be famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. The neighbor women gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. So they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez was born to Hezron, and to Hezron was born Ram, and to Ram Amminadab. And to Amminadab was born Nashon, and to Nashon Salmon, and to Salmon was born Boaz, and to Boaz Obed, and to Obed was born Jesse, and to Jesse David. So here at the very end of the story, we are given why this is even here. All right, this is all about the line of David. And the elders have witnessed it, the transaction is done. Apparently, in doing that with the elders right there, that's the same as the formal marriage ceremony. We aren't told much more about the wedding if there was one, but Ruth is now Boaz's wife, right? And they have a son, right? And we see even in the blessing of the people, right? They go back to Perez, right? Who is the descendant of Judah and Tamar, right? So that's another situation that was somewhat similar, right? But the idea being raising up a child with someone else as the legal father, right? And this child now of Boaz and Ruth is David's grandfather. So here we have really an explanation of why David is a descendant of a Moabite. Now think about that. David is a descendant of a Moabite. Right? Remember at the beginning I said that the children of Moabites weren't supposed to worship in a temple or in a tabernacle. They weren't supposed to come before the Lord. And we have a pretty good idea that David did come before the Lord at least once or twice. But no, this now we understand, and this is an explanation of, well, Ruth wasn't just a Moabite. She was a Moabite that turned away from Moab, that turned away from the gods of Moab. She embraced the Lord of Israel. She wasn't a Moabite. She was a proselyte. And she was the mother of David's grandfather. And we can't end there because the Bible doesn't end there. There's one more reference to Ruth. That reference is found in Matthew 1:5. Right? Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth, and Obed the father of Jesse. Right. Now, so in this, and this may help explain why Boaz was who he was and why he was willing to take the step. Rahab. Do we know that name? Who was Rahab? Anyone?
She
was the prostitute from Jericho that ended up marrying a Jew, became a Jew, and we now find out she was Boaz's mother. So this idea of having a Gentile spouse is not terribly offensive to Boaz. He's got Gentile mom. Okay. But this is interesting. Ruth is in the line of Christ. As a matter of fact, that passage, I want to get into it someday because we have a whole genealogy of Christ that's studded with Gentiles. And every woman whose name is in that genealogy is Gentile. It's worth looking over sometime. But let's close there. We're out of time by a lot. So let's close with a word of prayer. Our Father, we thank you for Ruth, for the marvelous person that she was. Father, we recognize that in your graciousness, you chose to include her in the ancestry of your Son, of Jesus Christ and his birth. Father, as we look at her, I again ask that we would see in her things that we would emulate, that would be worthy of us mirroring in our lives, that we would show the same loyalty and devotion and humility that is seen in Ruth. We ask these things in Christ's name. Amen.